Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Nerds Podcast, episode number 236. A lot of fun stuff going on over at the YouTube channel, youtube.com/Nerdist. Check that shit out. Then click subscribe because you're a good person and you want to help us.
Yes. Yes, you want to help us. Help Nerdist.
Well, I just scared away anyone who was going to help us before by irritating them. Was that too irritating, Katie?
That was a little weird.
Please, don't hold back. Just be as honest as you.
You asked.
You know, to be fair, I did. Listen, I don't need to be surrounded by people telling me that everything I do is good. I need young kids with moxie like you giving me the actual score so I can totally know what's really going on. Right?
Sure.
All right, you're fired. Okay, I'm sorry. You're rehired. I like 4 second firings. You're fired. All right, you're rehired. Because then it gives me the sense of being, you know, like I get a surge of power, you know, to satisfy my douche genes. But then I have no intention of keeping you fired. So then a few seconds later, then you get the relief of like, all right, I got my great job back where I have to run all these podcasts. So I think it sort of works out for everyone.
It does.
If you think about it.
Yeah. Right. Thank you.
You're welcome. This episode of Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Comedy Bang Bang, Scott Aukerman's show, every Friday at 10, 9 central on IFC. If you haven't seen it yet, it's just kind of an absurd half-hour comedy talk show that looks like a talk show. Scott Aukerman, Reggie Watts is the band. When Reggie Watts is your band, for Christ's sake, he's had amazing guests, Amy Poehler, Zach Galifianakis, Seth Rogen. This Friday, today, if you're listening to this, it's Elizabeth Banks. Elizabeth freaking Banks. It's going to be on Comedy Bang Bang. So check it out. Comedy Bang Bang. Comedy so nice, they banged it twice. Every Friday, 10, 9 central on IFC. And now this episode of Nerdist Podcast. These are my friends Gabe and Etta, Deani and Divine. This was recorded a while back. I was sort of waiting for a good event thing to build the podcast around that you could check out. So they made this move. Well, first of all, Gabe and Etta did the Huck Finn Robotic Edition, where they essentially kickstarted like $30,000+ when they were trying to get six to make a book where they replaced the N-word in Huck Finn with robot. And so everywhere, and then they had the book beautifully bound and re-illustrated. So everywhere where Jim was is a robot, and it's phenomenal. They're hilarious people. Amazing sketch comedy writers. I've done comedy with them for years and years and years, and I feel like everyone should know who they are. And so, just being the kind of self-starters that they are, they made a movie. Like, they wrote a script and just made a movie themselves called The Selling. It's a paranormal comedy, which I loved. A bunch of my friends were in it. Jana Farney was in it. Cole Stratton was in it. Simon Helberg's in it. And Gabe and Ed are in it. And it's a fucking great movie. And so they are kickstarting basically a theatrical release. So if you go to Kickstarter and just type The Selling into the search bar, I believe it goes until about mid-August. They're trying to raise $25,000 to get a theatrical release. And I wanted to have them on not only because I love them and I think they're funny and they were on the stand-up comedy cluster from last year that we did here at Meltdown, but just as people, as self-starters, as people who have that kind of entrepreneurial, like, hey, we want to do a thing, we're just going to go out and make it. I thought it would be great to have them on because a lot of you guys want to do the same stuff. And you say, how do I do comedy? How do I make a movie? How do I write a TV show? And so just from their point of view, I wanted to have them on to talk about that. And they're just lovely people. So you can follow them at Diani Devine on Twitter, DianiDevine, and DianiandDevine.com. So here we go. Gabe Diani, Edda Devine, Diani and Devine on the Nerds Podcast, episode number 236.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
But I don't want drink from their water bottle.
I know.
I'm fine. Did you say I'm fine with blowing strangers, but I don't want to drink from their water bottles?
Yeah, you know.
Dicks aren't mouths. Mouths are gross. I don't want to put my mouth on someone's mouth.
No.
Exactly.
Just like, just like Julia Roberts from Pretty Woman. She's what like, she didn't do? Like oh, kissing. No kissing.
Exactly.
That's right.
That's right.
She'll totally gob your knob for $300, but not there. No kissing.
You thought it was like an emotions thing. No, she's just OCD.
In the first draft, that was Jason Alexander's character that didn't want to kiss in the mouth,
and they changed it.
Yeah,
didn't make sense. I was just thinking about that movie the other day, and what an amazing
movie!
What an amazing feat it was. Like, she's a hooker, but she's adorable.
Right,
and she's
well, they usually are. So
yeah, they can be.
So I.
She had a pretty nice apartment too, if I remember.
Very nice apartment.
Do you see her apartment?
Yeah, I think like in the very beginning.
Oh, what's
like,
your her dream kind of time?
And then her apartment.
Oh,
you ever drive down Western at like 3 o'clock in the morning?
Those aren't women.
Those are real hookers.
Those aren't women.
Yes,
though.
A lot of pretty women just waiting to be rescued by a billionaire.
Get past third. We heard reports of the prostitutes being out at like 8 a.m.
On a school day.
On
our corner.
When they're supposed to be in school.
Right, when they're supposed to be in school.
And you know that times are tough when they're pulling the morning shift.
Yeah, that's right. It's like a cabbie. Yeah,
I work from. Like, and you know, hanging around Waikiki, there were just tons of prostitutes everywhere.
Really?
Yeah, and they're all gorgeous. It was crazy.
Nice.
Yeah, just tons everywhere. Like a few on every corner.
Hawaiian hooker. You guys have a Hawaiian hooker surplus.
Yeah, we do. I don't know. Last time I went, I didn't see any. I think they had to move to a different part of the town.
Hmm. We want to lose a lot of money. We should go play in Hawaii. We should just do a nerd show in Hawaii.
That would be a great idea. Maybe the hookers will come out. We'll go to all the favorite places like Hanaalma Bay and Mauna Loa and
two different islands, Chris.
Yep, that's right. Wow. We're going to hit both islands.
There's more than two, Chris.
What?
What
was the leprechaun colony? Lanai? Or is that Molokai?
The leprechaun colony?
The leprechaun colony. The
leprechaun colony.
That's Ireland. That was
Ireland.
That was Lanai Kilkenny, right? Yeah. That's where the leprechauns were.
We've buried Molokai. Our gold in the sand.
Molokai has
Don't that. You know? Buried it right in the sand.
Hey, me gold.
Gabe Diani, Edda Devine, you are Diani and Devine.
Yeah.
Indeed we are.
We've been friends for a very long time. I wanted to have you guys on the show because you're two of my favorite people. Aww. And also you're tremendously funny. But a lot of people listen to this podcast who are just like yourselves. They are, you know, young, funny, talented creators, and a lot of people don't really know how to do stuff, like how to get their stuff done. And you have just demonstrated two times back to back that, you know, you guys with very limited resources managed to write, direct, and produce a film and also a book.
Oh, we sound really impressive.
Yeah. It is pretty impressive. No, when you, you know, when you think about it.
Just to say anything, make it ever all sound impressive. You have weight to it, I think.
Yeah.
You're a pig farmer.
Hey, that is impressive.
You know what?
Honorable.
That is a fucking hard job.
It is.
No.
Pig farming? Who would, you know.
See, he can make anything sound
every day.
Well,
every day.
Look, you Unforgiven. Have to, like, that every was day a hard job.
You're farming pigs.
Have you not seen Lady Hoggers on A&E after Storage Wars?
Wait, what?
Lady Hoggers is really good.
Lady Hoggers.
Is Lady Hoggers, wait, was that the movie with Matthew Brown? Broderick, where Michelle Pfeiffer by day.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
But by day, Michelle Pfeiffer is a bird, but by
Lady
night,
Hawk.
Rutger Hauer is a pig.
Lady Hawk.
Oh, okay.
And I think he's. Is he a pig?
No, he's a wolf.
Oh.
Big, bad wolf.
He should have been a pig.
He should have been a pig. That would be...
I think Lady Hog...
In my opinion, all men are pigs, right?
Hey.
I think Lady Hog would have been a far superior film. He's a pig by night.
Let's do it. Let's remake it.
Did you just say all men are pigs?
Right.
Well done, Monique.
Your legs aren't that hairy.
Well played. Well played, Mr. Myra. Well...
you hurt his feelings.
We also just had you guys on the Nerdist stand-up special, which will go up before this podcast, so people will already have been familiar with you. But
they can see if they can spot when the alarm goes
off. Oh, come on.
On Etta's phone.
I didn't hear that.
What was that alarm for?
As a drunk girl in my dorm once said, "My don't have a baby vitamin."
So, okay. Yeah. Sure.
Because we were selling the book, and so on her phone, she's got this thing called the Square.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Square, where you can sell.
And it was in, and sort of it was out, and she was going to leave. But everyone kept sort of picking it up, and she was obsessive compulsive. She was like, "Everyone's touching my phone."
I touched it. I did. I picked it up.
So she put it in the backpack, thinking we'll go on about 9:30, and then we ended up going on around 10, which is when it goes off. And
thanks a lot, and Pete Holmes.
Yeah.
I did not see you take your birth control pill on stage, so did you forget it that night?
I did.
Oh, good.
So, who
Surprise!
Knows?
Surprise!
Guys,
Merry
we're
Christmas.
Here to tell you we're pregnant.
Your post-show victory sex. Oh,
yes.
No!
Yes.
What happened? I first met you guys through my ex-girlfriend, Janet.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go to college with Janet?
Yeah.
Yeah, we went to college together, and then we were in a sketch comedy group called Totally False
Totally People. False People, which was a San Francisco...
Not a terrible name.
Yeah.
A lot of sketch groups have terrible names.
There was a huge debate over what
name
the
again.
Name was going to be. My pitch was the Great Depression.
I also like that.
And then there was Tiny Orphans with No Hope, which I thought was too long. Mm. But then Tiny Orphans sort of batted around for a little bit. And then Janet and Cole and Dave went to go see Kids in the Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And I was poor and I couldn't afford a ticket.
Sidebar, Janet and Cole and Dave created and produced SF Sketchfest.
Yes, and thankfully, I decided not to join them in that.
You were doing something really important.
I'm going to go do my one-man show. You guys have fun with their little sketch thing.
And off Gabe goes with his turtleneck. in a
and
pipe.
And now it's like, you know, this huge thing. And
But you perform in it every year.
It's been a while. We did last year.
Yeah.
So we've been busy making the movie and stuff.
So they went to see Kids in the Hall, and what happened?
And so I don't remember which kid it was, but in the bio, he said something and said, "Totally False People." And then there's like, "Let's have it be our name." And that was sort of like, the least contention. So that one won out.
I don't really like to see any sketch group that doesn't have a screw or a nut that's loose.
That's true. That's
in the name of the
right,
the room,
or a marble that's out.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Or the slip nuts.
Nuts, like I said, nuts.
You remember the slip nuts?
No,
there was that one sketch
group?
On
one
Conan.
Sketch
no,
on Conan.
It was a fake Andy Blitz and Andy
Blitz
Slipknot. And John Glazer. They wanted to book Slipknot as a musical guest, and they messed up and booked the Slipknots, which are these guys that just wear sweater vests and
we're
slip
the
slip on nuts.
Nuts. Slip yeah. It on nuts.
Jesus Christ.
Delightful.
But, you know, again, time after time, you guys have demonstrated, and then, you know, with Cole and Janet and Dave and starting SF Sketchfest, it's like, hey, we like this thing. We're just going to start our own thing.
Right.
And so I think you have a lot of wisdom to impart to people who may feel like, well, I don't have resources and I don't, you know, yes, I have an idea, but I don't know how the fuck I'm going to get it made or what's going to happen. And so,
right.
You know, so and I'm sure it didn't always feel like you were gaining wisdom through the process, but you were and you have a few years ago. Had come up with this script called The Selling.
Mm-hmm.
So do you want to just talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. Well, first of all, we don't recommend people do anything the way we
no.
do it. We recommend having a famous parent or something.
Yeah.
That's really the best way.
It is. It is.
Done. But if in absence of that, you know, you can do it yourself. A friend of mine from college, Emily Wilbur, called me up and said that she wanted to direct a film and wanted me to write and star in it. And I was in L.A. and no one cared that I was in L.A. So I'm like, yeah, sure, okay, I'll do that. And so developed this idea about a real estate agent trying to sell a haunted house. And then we scraped together some money and we made it.
Yeah, we did.
Shot it in 14 days.
Not enough time.
Really?
For a feature film.
Yeah.
You shot it in 14
days? We were shooting 10 or 13 pages a day.
Oy.
It was insane.
And
but there's not that much dark outside. I don't understand. I assume some of it was dark.
Some of it was dark. But you can shoot night for day, or day for night.
Yeah.
You can shoot night for day, I suppose, but that would be a lot more expensive.
It's really expensive to get the sun out in the middle of the night.
Yes.
You either
that bastard fucking charges up the roof.
His agent's a dick too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Total.
You either have to go to Iceland or someplace.
It's pricey.
Yeah, it
it's
is.
A pricey prospect.
And the hotels in Iceland are
ice. They're made of ice.
They're made of
ice.
No, they're made of green.
They have those.
They're made of green.
Ones in Greenland are made of ice.
Yes.
Okay.
You know, when we went to the screening, you had the screening at AFI for The Selling. And listen, whenever you go to your friend's thing and you don't know what, I had wanted to be in The Selling and my work schedule, I was out of town for a lot of the days that you had to shoot.
Right.
And so it just wasn't going to work out. And I'm sorry that I wasn't able to do it, but
you could have been a huge, festival star. In Singapore.
Yeah.
Finally. We're always trying to get messaging about the podcast out to the Asian countries. And so that would have been a huge boon for us. But, you know, when you go to see your friend's thing or if it's a one-man show or if it's a, then you're always like, oh God, please don't suck.
Please. Yeah.
Because it's going to be difficult to look a good close friend in the eye and have to lie and they're going to know I'm lying. But that didn't happen. The Selling was a fucking great, hilarious, wonderful movie. And it was a really impressive thing that you guys did.
Thanks, man. Yeah. It's the opposite is true, where you're putting something together and you're inviting your friends to come see it, and you're like, oh, are people gonna lie? Or, you know, is it gonna be terrible?
Well, you know, you'd prefer they lie, but you actually would really prefer that they actually enjoy
like
it. So.
But then, you know, you never trust that they're telling the truth. Like, oh, well, they're just.
Because all you see is everything that's wrong with it. And
yeah, well, we've been living with it for 2 years, and, you know, it wasn't what, you know, we wanted it to be in our heads. So, you know, you always, you know, you imagined it being some big epic, you know, we're making the next Ghostbusters. And, you know, and if it doesn't quite work out that way, you
But I think that's just being an artist, is being unhappy with yourself.
Yeah,
I don't think you should ever be too happy with, like, the end product. You know, you should feel that there's always something more to do to it.
Yeah.
Well, I think you should be happy. I just think you should never feel too content with anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, you should feel happy and you should say, hey, this was a great learning process for the next movie. I'll know this and this and this. Because I would imagine the learning curve is pretty steep.
Oh, yeah.
Because you've never made a movie before.
No.
And so what you know, like, what did it feel like? What'd you take away from the process?
Don't trust anyone.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
How so?
We're really easy to take advantage of.
Yes.
Noted.
We're
guys, can I stay at your house tonight?
Well, sure.
Yeah. You need to go to the airport?
Yeah.
LAX, though. I don't want to drive to Burbank.
No.
Too close.
That is too easy.
Ontario?
Sure. Yes. Of course.
Ontario Airport.
Yeah. SFO. I'm flying out of SFO.
Okay.
It's a weird flight. I have to fly from Ontario to Long Beach.
Uh-huh.
Can you pick me up at Long Beach, then take me to LAX?
Yes.
Okay. It's just connecting.
Yeah.
And then I take a car to the other.
Do you want me to bring
airport.
You lunch, too? Or?
If you could, that'd
okay.
be great. They are really easy to me. Oh, my God.
We we're, like you said, have limited resources, and we're making these things because we're passionate about them and our name's on it, and we want it to be good. And we kind of assume that if people are in a similar place where they have a company or whatever, and they're, like, trying to make their name, and their name's going to be on the movie, that they would sort of have a similar feeling for it, but some people
are just terrible.
Some people are content to just sort of say, I'm done with this and move on. And I'm sort of speaking generally, but there was a post-production house that ended up being a post-production apartment.
Post-production studio flat.
And that we made a deal with to, do things on a bargain in exchange for, you know, a certain type of credit and stuff. And they were just, they wanted us to lock picture before we'd even had a chance to, like, go through the whole thing.
We found out that none of them had ever scrubbed the footage, which means they had never gone and looked at every take. They just took the on-set assemblage and, like, messed with that a little bit.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
They weren't letting us work with the editor because they wanted the editor to do his pass first, which ended up being, like, they weren't weren't actually doing any work, and so didn't want us to know that they weren't.
One
doing
more post production bachelor efficiency.
Yes,
that's probably what it was more like.
There you go.
Yes.
Well,
so,
I think
so. Anyway, so you just kind of
no one's. I think it's important to remember that no one is ever going to care about your thing
absolutely
as much as you
any more than as much or more than you care about
absolutely.
Your thing.
Right.
You know, especially if it's a hired gun, they're just sort of, you know. I mean, there is a certain amount of luck, I think, that's involved with finding the right person who gets what you're doing. And
yeah.
So if you were to do that differently, how would you vet, a post-production facility?
Well, we fired those people.
Yeah. Which is, I think, a big lesson that we learned is that if someone, because I've always been an actor, so I've had people telling me what to do. You know, I've been a waitress, so I've been having people tell me what to do.
You're trying to be likable.
Right, and you're trying to be nice, and you treat people how you want to be treated. But maybe there's a reason why people in charge are assholes. And and if someone's not doing a good job, you can't just wait for them to start doing a good job, because they're not going to. And if they're being a jerk and they're unhappy in the situation, it's doing them a favor to fire them, because then they don't have to be there anymore.
Right.
So we learned we need to be assholes.
Yeah.
Well, not assholes, but probably just...
If someone's not doing their job, that they should go.
Yeah. It's
right.
business.
If you give them a couple opportunities and they make it clear that they just don't give a shit, or they have a totally different idea than something that you have, then you need to be okay with moving on.
And that's really hard to do that, but it's something that I think you need to do if you're going to be in charge. So,
but we put the word out to friends that we knew and just said, we're looking for this. And, you know, we'd get recommendations and talk to people. And through that, we found most of our core sort of crew team that we'll want to work with on the next one. And we found a great post-production house called The Product Factory. It's in
Burbank, love.
And they're great, wonderful people. They do all the Marvel
motion
animated
comics. Yeah.
stuff.
Oh, great!
Comics,
yeah, yeah,
the animated shows, and they're just really great, and they're really passionate about the project, and so it's been great.
Yeah.
So, how did your friend Emily bring the money to the table, or did you have to go out and raise money? If you were going to go out and raise money, what would you do?
Now we would crowdfund.
Yeah, crowdfunding. Kickstarter or Indiegogo or something like that is what we do now. But she brought the money, most of the money.
Yeah.
And, you know, after our post...
It's called private equity funder.
Right.
Oh, that's very fancy.
After our post-production issues, we had to sort of raise some more money. Yeah. And we broke the major rule of filmmaking, which is don't invest in your own film. so there's some of our money tied up in selling as well. But next time around, we'd probably do like Kickstarter or something.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Which you used Kickstarter for the Huck Finn robotic edition.
We did.
Which was tremendously successful.
Yes, more so than we ever anticipated. Yeah. We were just setting out to like make a funny video and like, oh, well, you know, maybe 200 people will give us $20.
Well, because we were going to do Sketchfest, so we were on a deadline to write some new material, which we'd been so busy making a movie that we hadn't done in years.
Right. So I saw that about the controversy about a guy making a version of Huck Finn where they're replacing the N-word with slave. And so I tweeted that I was doing a version replacing with a robot. And then I immediately deleted the tweet because I thought, well, that's actually a funny idea and I don't want anyone to take it.
And we had just, our friend Jocelyn Town had just done a really successful Kickstarter campaign for her movie IMI, and we'd been involved with that. And so we'd just come off of that and I said, you know, we could really do it.
Yeah, with self-publishing technology and crowdfunding, we could actually like make a, and the idea was like go to lulu.com and just sort of make, you know, a nice soft
pack. So you're right. So your original idea was to, as comedians... Oh, well, if everyone's offended, you know, by the N-word in this classic work of fiction, which, you know, Mark Twain was not a fan of that word himself.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So it's not about, you know, it wasn't about being offensive to people, but, you know, you have to consider contextually when it was written in the story he was trying to tell.
Right.
And we go on this journey with Huck where he, in his society, what he's doing, you know, helping Jim escape, that's wrong. That's a bad thing to do. And he, because he loves Jim, decides that I'm going to do a bad thing. I'm going to help him. And we go on that journey with him. And that's a really important journey, and you can't have that without
It's also kind of Mark Twain's personal journey, because he grew up in a racist area, and he was raised that way. And then over the course of his life, he became, a strong evolutionist.
And Jim is based on a real man that he knew. Mm-hmm. So
your idea was, okay, fine, like as comedians.
Right.
All right, fine. If that word, you know, but we essentially need to come up with a character that can be treated as an object.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Let's literally make him an object.
And right. the word robot is from the Czech word for slave or serf.
Not so, necessarily slave, but like servitude, yeah, like forced,
servitude,
manual,
forced
labor
manual labor
is what robota, the word.
So the etymology of the word, yeah, actually makes
yeah,
sense.
Yeah, and it's been used in all sorts of popular culture as a stand-in for oppression.
What is C-3PO, you know, and R2-D2 than Luke's slaves, really?
Yeah. Master Luke.
Well, he's a protocol droid.
Right, but they're sold by robot traders right. to Uncle Owen, and yeah. he's Luke's property.
They're high-class sounding slaves, yeah. is exactly. what they are, robot
but
slaves.
As long as they don't have a bad motivator, I'll take them.
I had always, you know, I tried to make a bit work in my act for a long time, and I could just never make it work, but it was all about that people, that humanity wants to be, that we're sort of inherently racist. And so that's one of the things with robots, like becoming more into our culture, that it gives people something to be racist at.
Right.
And it'd be like, but then robots gain awareness, and there's kids in the schoolyard like, your mom's a battery ape. And he's like, you have to recharge too. It's called sleeping. Ah! You know, it's just like the schoolyard fights between the racist kids and the robots. And so it's a funny, it's an interesting idea to do that, you know, with Huck Finn, and a funny idea. But even because we posted it on Nerdist, and then people were like, people who are strong Twain supporters got grouchy in the sense of like, well, why do we have to replace it all? Like, they're comedians. It's a fucking joke. Like, yeah. it's funny. And, but what's great about the joke is that it was really well done.
Thank you.
The Kickstarter campaign, when you were hoping to just raise like $6,000, you raised right. over mm-hmm. 30.
Yeah. Right.
Because you made a great video and
our friend has a great blog that people read, and he told them
you
about
guys
what?
Who's
that
blog? Gold with the extra money? I would have bought
extra.
Gold. You can do that, right?
Yes. Well, the thing is,
someone posted. like, what are you going to do with the extra $24,000? That you raised, as though like we all like the original plan was to make like 200 books for yeah. like $6,000, and it's like, well, actually we don't have extra.
Yeah, no, we blew all of it, but
nice
on hats.
But you know, we felt like we had an obligation to make a really nice product since people gave us all that money. So it's like a hardback. It's
the book
paper.
Is gorgeous.
Yeah,
we didn't really go through Lulu. We formed our own publishing company, yeah. and like we
see again. You just did another thing.
Yeah,
you fucking formed your own publishing company.
And we like went to like a real book manufacturer, yeah. and we created. You know, we tried to, you know, hardback, and we redid all of the
every
illustrations
single illustration
that had anyone of color. In
hardback
it
is a racist term for a turtle, and I don't appreciate your racism.
Sorry.
Hey, you hear that hardback beat the hair in that race? Fucking hardbacks.
Hardback is my friend.
Oh, I could talk about that. I have a couple hardback friends. Yeah.
We prefer
I have a couple
American.
Turtle friends.
Sir,
I
am a hardback.
You are talking to a hardback. But the book is beautiful. Like, it's beautifully bound. And then part of what sold it is that rather than just being a jokey idea, there was real substance behind it, and the artwork was gorgeous. Yeah. Like the artwork was very authentic mm-hmm. to the time of the piece, and you know where this robot was beautifully illustrated into right. these yeah. old
well,
times.
We took the original illustrations by E.W. Kemble from the original edition of the book, and Etta's mom is trained as a biological
illustrator. Yeah,
she did like textbooks and stuff,
wow.
and so she photoshopped out. Jim and put in.
I don't think
robot.
It was some sort of complicated thing she
yeah,
invented how
understand.
To do with taking him out, and I don't know.
She didn't really know Photoshop either, so she was like teaching herself how to do Photoshop. So it was a sort of a trial and error yeah. process.
I wish you had just drawn a bad robot costume over Jim, so you can see part of his arm. Yeah.
Just a robot mask.
It was just yeah. Rosie from the Jetsons.
Yes. Well, there was lots of discussion when we were designing Jim of like, you know, what direction
like?
We were going
to yeah.
go. At one point, we were thinking like maybe like 1950s, totally anachronistic. So like, and like he's really big and bulky, and like he weighs down the raft and stuff. but we decided on it, the classier way to go would be to do it like a steampunk. Really try to integrate it and make it look like
technology
it.
Of the
got
time.
A Scud disposable assassin look to him too. Just real slender, big head.
Yes.
It's not like an Iron Giant thing where all of a sudden he turns into a fucking laser cannon.
Well, you know, there are sequels to the book, so,
yeah, so maybe
that no one's ever read.
Later. We actually had someone approaching us through the Kickstarter thing saying, yeah, I'm a book agent. I heart this idea. And
he said, I heart this idea?
Yeah, and he said, you know, if you, like, change the plot and stuff like Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, then, like, we could probably sell this and stuff. And it's like, that's not the project. The idea is, like, to satirize someone just changing a word or, like, minorly changing it but trying to stay true to Twain's original vision. And so, unfortunately, you know, we...
Well, my favorite thing is kind of the people who don't get it.
Yeah.
I just think there's just a segment of the population who doesn't... And I don't know if it's an Asperger-y thing or if it's just a literally thing, but that don't understand that sometimes what you say isn't what you mean. And they just really don't know that.
Well, that's, you know, you run up against that when you're, yeah, I mean, I've had this conversation with tons of people, like other Twitters. It was Weird Al. I was talking to Weird Al about this very thing where he goes, you know, I am who I am and people know what I'm about. And I'll say something that is clearly a joke. And there's still a percentage of people that be like, how can you say that, man? You're like, what is that? You know what I'm about. What are you what are you talking about?
But what's crazy is, like you said, a lot of, like, Twain supporters got grumpy about it. And it's like, Twain
was a satirist.
The book has satire in it, and they're like, they're not getting the joke.
Yeah.
And it's just weird. I was expecting more sort of like people misunderstanding it as sort of some sort of racist thing that we were doing. But it was mostly just people were like, how could you do this to this classic book?
And you're like, hey, if you see what we're doing, we're on the same fucking side.
Yeah, exactly.
We are satirizing the idea of changing a word, a classic piece of literary history.
Right.
And you're angry. You know, the bottom line is people hate change. They don't like things to be fucked with.
Right. I would just like paper money as well.
Only paper money. But you know, again, time and time again, you guys keep figuring out ways to turn things that you care about into actual things. And so that's, you're the perfect example of, like, what, I mean, you know, using your friend groups, using the internet, using social networks, the Kickstarter campaign of just figuring out, I mean, that this book could have just been a tweet and an idea that you're like, that'd be fun, but I don't know how the fuck to go about that. But, but you actually just figured it out. Did you write down a series of steps, like, well, here's, we're going to do this, or we're going to do this, or was it just sort of intuitively?
I think it's mostly foolishness and an ability to not have a social life or do the dishes. I mean,
right. We have Dishmageddon at home.
Dishmageddon.
If anyone wants to come over and help.
Like, it's that, okay, we can do that. You know, I mean, I've been doing a play for the last 3 months too, and it didn't even occur to me to not do it. You know, so it's like, oh, an opportunity. Okay. So I'm just saying yes when we probably shouldn't.
But
I,
like, at the beginning, it's like, okay, well, Lulu makes it easy. You make your PDF and you upload it and stuff like that. And then when we had to do it, we decided to do it on our own to sort of, you know, increase the quality of the book. It was just steps of trying to figure it out. You know, like, okay, well, what do we got to do next? And it's, what do you got to do now? And then, oh, shipping's this much. And we didn't charge enough for international shipping, by the way. If anyone's planning on making a book, charge more than $5.
Yes, because it costs $14.95
because you have to priority ship it.
Yeah.
You can't send it first. Or you can send it first class.
If it's light enough.
It's cheaper to send it first class to Canada. I don't know if this is interesting to anyone, but if you're sending it anywhere else, you'll have to send it priority and it'll be $14.
$14.95.
Jerks.
Yeah.
So,
and by the way, the post office
they're terrible.
Does not make it easy to give them money.
We tried to give them so much money, and they made it so hard.
Their padded priority envelopes are only... This is something that if you're planning on trying to get a book out before Christmas, order your padded envelopes from the post office, because they don't carry them in the post office at all. You have to order them, and it takes like 2 weeks to get...
I'm bored, Gabe.
This is something I'm passionate about.
No, I'm interested in this.
I drove to like 7 post offices and asked for, hey, do you have the 9.5 by 12.5 padded priority envelope for international? And those don't exist. You're crazy, was what I got.
And you can only order 15 at a time unless you, like, call the customer service line and wade through until you find someone who can actually help you so you can order more.
They're worse than AT&T.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
What was your... So, because we talked about the experience of you, like, going to the post office and then just, like, being like, what do you...
Well, I went like a week or two ahead of time and said,
Can we get an appointment?
700 books. Can we like make an appointment or can we want to send a media mail. Can we like get a media mail stamp, like printed out 700 of them that we can just stamp on at home and bring them in? Like, no, you got to bring them in and stand in line.
So we were the worst people in the world coming into the post office right before Christmas with thousands of things.
Oh my God. And
this is just something you never thought of when you decided to make the book. Like, oh yeah, at some point we're going to have to actually mail these out to people. Yeah.
Right. But we thought PayPal's got like this data merge thing where you have your addresses that you need to send to. You can do a data merge of all 700 of them and then you can print out all the postage at home and stick
prepaid,
them on.
Prepaid, easy.
So we start doing it and like it's not working. There's like some error or whatever. We call the customer service line and they're like, oh yeah, that service doesn't exist anymore, but we haven't taken it off the website in case we decide to offer that service again.
Nowhere does it say.
In case we decide to offer the service again.
Right. So be forewarned about this. So we were planning on that, and so we were, it's been a steep learning curve.
So you had to stamp and stuff 700 envelopes.
Yes.
Which is a luxury problem. You sold 700 books.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then so we got all the envelopes ready and we got all the books ready and then we waited in line with like a box of books each. And then we got to the person, started doing them. Then she'd go out to the car or I'd go out to the car and start bringing in all these other boxes.
And you could just feel the stares from the back of the line of the hatred.
And well-founded
Well-founded hatred.
You know, I'm not arguing that, but there was no other way for us to do it. Wow. Sorry.
So we just like to apologize to everyone who tried to mail a letter.
Yeah. At the Nat King Cole post office.
Don't.
On 3rd.
They're going to, your picture's going to be up on like next to the most wanted people. Like, do not let this person, these people in here.
I don't want to say surprisingly, but as unhelpful as the post office in general was, the actual
people were
actually really sweet and helpful and were really great about it. So I'll say that for the post office.
You can cut all of this out.
It's all staying in.
It's our bread and butter post office talk.
I gotta go. You're gonna have to go shoot
Matt.
B-roll.
Yep.
Matt's gotta go produce Attack of the Show Gadgetron segment.
Bye.
What are you reviewing today?
27-inch iMac.
Right. You're reviewing an iMac on Really?
Yeah, you get a MacBook Pro, don't worry.
What? Oh nice. Very exciting.
Joni, you get your own mic now. How does that feel?
It feels a lot better.
Yeah.
Feels a lot better.
Were you guys sharing a chair too?
No, I was sitting over here.
Okay.
It was very much lower than everybody else. I didn't like that feeling.
It's easier to make eye contact with you this way.
Yeah, I think so.
It was sort of dividing up the eye contact, and then I ended up focusing
more on this. I've discovered a real connection between Gabe and Jonah ever since Matt left.
I know.
Yeah.
It's really.
Well, he was in the way.
Sweet.
It's hard for him not to be.
It's nice to see you guys.
Notice we're all talking a lot more intimately now.
Working.
Are you getting a burrito?
Thinking about it.
I always loved your guys' comedy, which is why I put you on the stand-up special, because it was very unique and unlike anything that I'd ever seen before, where you kind of do these two-person, almost radio plays.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So what was the genesis of that idea versus doing...
Genesis?
Was
it
a callback to Star Trek 3?
Yes, we know.
No? Okay.
we know.
The big ears?
Yeah, I know.
Okay. The genesis of it was that I was working in Totally False People, which was a great sketch comedy group. But
Gabe's crotchety.
I'm a little crotchety. I'm a bit of an old man. And it was very much inspired by sort of modern sketch comedy where it's sort of lights up, wacky costumes, crazy characters. And
pussy
then,
wigs.
Pussy wigs. And
Merkins, sorry, Merkins.
Yeah.
And pussy then, wigs. You know, below line, lights out. And that's fine, but I found myself being used as kind of sort of a sight gag a lot. If there's someone who needs to take off their clothes or to get, like, fake blood all over them, it usually ended up being me, which I was happy to do. But I just got kind of tired of, going to the sink after in a comedy club bathroom and trying to clean up after a show.
What was the bit you did that I saw you on Theme Park that one time? I remember I really loved it.
Oh, that was Homeless Boss.
Yes. Yeah,
and
yeah.
That was the first sketch that I wrote. And it's a little hacky in terms of structure, but I still love it. It's basically you have someone starting a day of work and is like, I just want to tell you something about my boss. He was homeless for 15 years and then turned his life around and now he's this, multimillionaire. And then I come in as the very high status, hey, how are you? Blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, do you have 50 cents?
I remember I dug it, but I remember, like, to your point where you're saying about how you're a crushy old man and how you resent things. I was like backstage. I was like, wow, great performance, man. That was a really funny sketch. And you're like, that's the first thing I wrote. I'm so tired of it. I don't want to do that anymore. I was like, well, it was good.
It's hard though, because you get in your own head about stuff, and you forget. Oh, other people don't have the same perspective on this material that I have.
Right.
You know, so that's easy. It's easy to forget that sometimes. But I also, you know, and you guys are also responsible for my complete emergence into the Doctor Who world.
Yes.
Because when the series rebooted in 2005, you were right on top of it, and you were like, "We're going to this Doctor Who convention. The show has rebooted with Christopher Eccleston, and I guess in my head, I mean, I had old Doctor Who, and I was like, really, is it, you know, is it good? Is it still like rubber masks, or is it, because I, you know, I watched Doctor Who as a little kid.
It made you sleepy.
I didn't see the Paul McGann Doctor Who.
We don't count that.
They counted the Doctor Who experience. Like they.
No, it counts. He's canon.
He is a Who. He's an official Doctor.
I'm allowed to have my feelings.
But I like it. I enjoy it. It's, you know, it was the first Who in like 10 years, I think, when it came out.
And so you got me back on board. So I owe you a lot for that.
We harassed you a lot about it. Come to the convention. Chris, come to the convention.
I mean, even before the new one came out, we've been going to conventions for like 10 years because we're huge nerds. And we were like, we would like loan you copies of Tom Baker episodes. And like, yeah, we tried to watch it and we got sleepy.
Yeah, the original, listen, I'm a huge Doctor Who fan, but I will say, and I think most people who are Doctor Who fans will appreciate this, some of the older episodes are a little slow and a little hard to watch. And, you know, I think the affection that we feel for them is like, especially if you saw them as a kid, they really kind of burrow into you and like, oh, it's so, you know, but
as it takes like six episodes to tell a story that would take like 45 minutes to tell now. And
right.
It's like,
right.
We have to go to the space station and then they show them walking to the station. And, you know.
So it's like a stage play. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just
they were shot like teleplays, basically.
Right. And it was extremely low budget. It was all about the ideas, and, you know, it's like Twilight Zone. They had a limited budget, and it was like, you know, it's hard sci-fi where they're just, you know, a couple people in a room talking about the space alien with the bubble.
But also, you know, if you look at the evolution of television, the only model that early television had to go on was theater. Right. And so a lot of television was just, like, they just put cameras in on a theater.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I didn't understand budgets when I was a kid, so I'm like, the Star Trek show was in the 1960s. At the same time, they had better special effects. Doctor Who is like, it's the 80s now. Why can't they have that? So
understand the timeline.
Well, the BBC does that crazy thing, too, whereas if a show does well, they give them less money the next season.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense to me.
But so
they don't need it.
You were responsible for that. You were responsible for that in my life. But then I also, you know, besides,
we're very happy for you that you got to hang out with David Tennant. We're not.
Oh, he's so great. I mean, really, he was great. I've met three doctors now.
That's fantastic.
Peter Davison.
I sat on Peter Davison's lap once for a picture. It wasn't a big deal.
I hope so.
It was for a picture after we had sex.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yes.
Davison likes to keep a record of, you know, everyone that doctor's been in, but also not just your presentation style, but, you know, you're like a lot of your stuff, like you know, you do a great Batman sketch, and you do great stuff with witches. It's just sort of like the, you know, it's sort of taking all these kind of nerdy things that we love and doing a very British thing, which is kind of making it about their bureaucracy or their process or their, you know, like,
someone said once that most storytelling is normal people in extraordinary situations, and our act is extraordinary people in normal situations.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah, and it's interesting that you say sort of a British sensibility. I hadn't realized that until you said it, but I totally see.
Well, that's just sort of the Terry Gilliam idea of like, oh, here's God, but then here's all of the people and the secretaries and the switchboards in place that run the infrastructure that holds heaven in place. It's like, it's that kind of, you know.
Well, when we were first sort of getting together to work on it, we'd been dating for about 5 years at that point, and I was in Totally False People, and she was doing these other projects, and she's amazing, one of the most funny people I know, and we just decided, you know, I think our careers are more important than any
than our relationships
that this will do to our relationship. So maybe we should start working together. And I had recently discovered Nichols and May, which I hadn't, I didn't know them as a kid, but my biggest comedy, you know, influences in sort of my teen years was like Cosby and Newhart and sort of that 50s, 60s sort of intellectual, smart, funny, clean humor. And so we sort of set out to do something like that in sort of the vein of Nichols and May and Newhart and Cosby. And that was, and it was really, we wanted to try to make a sketch stand-up hybrid where we could just go up and have two microphones and, like, you know, mime stuff, not have props, and just be in our regular...
It's so liberating not to have to bring a car full of crap to a gig.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's... Yes. 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 Even just being in a musical duo and just having to, you know, bring a guitar and make sure that there were... There was, you know, we need a DI box and we need this and that. And then they always fuck it up and wherever you go because they're not used to that
and
stuff.
And there's a stand-up in the show. He just shows up.
Yeah.
Goes on stage, does his thing, and it's like, I want to do that. Mm-hmm.
You know, touring stand-ups are great. I mean, you know, you imagine a band playing the same size venue has to divide everything between their all of the stagehands and all the people in the band and all of the equipment. And, it, you know, this is a stand-up. They're like, yeah, hey, here I am.
Yeah.
Sound check?
All loaded in.
What do you need a sound check for? Hello, hello, hello. I'm done.
Done.
What's the deal with? What is the deal with? Okay, we're good. I got it.
You gotta be kidding. Kidding me.
Kidding. Kidding.
I'm getting
kidding.
Some.
Bring it up on the D's. Bring it up on the D's. A little kidding. Feedback. Kidding.
Kidding. All right, we're good.
Balls. 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 Vaginas. Balls.
What else is going on?
I saw that
on?
Actually.
That was mine, unfortunately.
What else is going on?
What's happening in the world?
But when you're... So when you're making the movie and you're going through that, did... What else did you learn throughout that process for people that are listening that want to make a movie or make a thing?
Have a good line producer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have a plan for festivals. Read Chris Gore's book.
Chris Gore's festival book is great.
There were a couple books that we wish that we'd read ahead of time. Chris Gore's book about festivals and budgeting for festivals.
Yes.
Oh, we got into a festival. How did we get there? Because we spent all the money on the movie.
Yeah.
So that, and there's thinking outside the box office, like trying to, like the plan of, hey, we're going to make a movie and do the festival circuit and then someone's going to pick it up. I mean, that's
that just
really
doesn't happen
1990s,
anymore. Even for movies that go and do great at Sundance, that hardly ever happens anymore.
So you have to think in terms of what's the end game, what's your goal. If you just want to make a movie, fine, just do that. But if you want to make your investors money back, then you have to, you know, start thinking about distributing it yourself, having a plan for distribution if no one picks it up, doing some kind of hybrid distribution.
And there's so many new things that are happening now. There's this cool company called Distribber that you can skip a lot of the aggregators to get onto venues like Amazon and iTunes. And instead of taking 20, sales agent, instead of a sales agent getting 25%, they just take a flat rate. And so
what's that place?
It's called Distribber.
How's that?
Distribber.com.
Yeah.
And it's like it's a flat rate to convert it to the platforms that they need.
Is that D-I-S Distribber?
Yeah. D-I-S-T-R-I-B-B-E-R.
Okay.
Yeah.
We actually haven't used it cause we ended up going with a sales agent, but we're looking that way towards the future because we think that like movies and stuff are heading in the direction that at least for at the
level we're at,
like the music industry where like bands are marketing directly to their fans.
Yeah.
So if you can make something at a low enough cost and you know like Kevin Smith is you know he's a big name so he can market to his fans. But you know, cutting out the aggregators and going directly to your fans and stuff.
Distribution is just changing wildly out from under us. And
yeah, day to day, it's changing and different.
And what else? There's that book Producer to Producer that's really good about a lot of budgeting and things like that. I think a line producer is probably the most important person to get on your team who's good.
That's on your side.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of times that you'll have a line producer that you go, well, we need to do this. Ah, it's just not possible.
Exactly.
What about ideas about how to make it possible? Like you got to have a guy that's going to work with you and think of ideas on his own.
We interviewed a couple of people who got really angry with us for no reason. And we're like sending, like, when we said, like, thank you for your time, they're like, you're making a huge mistake by not going with me.
It's a mentality they all seem to have. Like, a lot of them, it's very important. You guys are right. You cannot stress enough that you need a good line producer who is, like, you know, there with as much passion about it as you are, because they're going to figure out.
You need pictures for your poster, because just because
you're shooting on the red doesn't mean that there's enough resolution
for a movie poster.
Really?
There's so many things that we didn't even know existed, like an online edit. What's that? It's how much?
Right. If you're shooting on the red like we were, then you have to edit in proxy files.
Yeah.
And then reconvert it to the high res things, because there's not a computer big enough to, you know.
And we sound like we know what we're talking about, but we really don't.
Yeah.
Well, you know more than most people. I mean, like, you've been through it, and you actually got a thing made. And is The Selling coming out next year?
Yeah. We have DVD VOD distribution, and they want to do it August, September, so they can sort of be promoting
push
it.
Push for Halloween.
Push for Halloween, which, like, we're like
another
heading
year.
Into year seven on this project, and then we have to wait until it comes out. But that's fine. And then it'll be on, I don't know if we can announce the cable channel it'll be on, but it'll be on a cable channel after that as well.
Great.
Awesome. Yeah. So,
I would say the biggest piece of advice is to just do as much research as you can. Read as many books as you can beforehand. Yeah. And
start with a good script. We've worked with so many people who are great people who just wanted to make a movie. And so, kind of, you know, if they just worked on the script a little bit longer,
then it would have been good.
Could have been something that might have sold and made some of their money back.
And never discredit the amount of good that audio and lighting can do.
Yeah.
Yes.
A lot of people think they got a nice camera and they can kind of skimp on other things, but those are two. Even if you're making a web video that you want to look good, audio and lighting, very, very important.
Well, we reshot our original
Kickstarter for the Huck Finn,
because it looked terrible, the first one. We shot it in our editor's house while his kids were sleeping.
Chad
Meserve, who designed Robot Jim as well.
Oh my God! Oh, nice. What's Chad's website with
DayOfTheRobot.com?
DayOfTheRobot.com.
They're so amazing.
These little robot figurines are so fucking awesome, and he made a little Nerdist one. He's eating a burrito and he has a Nerdist logo on his chest. He was like, "Here, I made this for you." I'm like, "Jesus Christ, these figurines are so awesome.
They're gorgeous.
They're so cool.
They're gorgeous."
He's got like a nativity scene and like a little Da Vinci flying guy.
He had a robot with antlers and a jetpack pulling a sleigh with a robot Santa.
Oh, that's awesome!
They're just great. Go to his website and check it out. But anyway, so what we were talking about? Oh, so we shot it at his house and we were editing it together. And Edda says, "This looks terrible. We can't use this."
I was a bad person. I walk in after they've been working all day. I'm like, "Guys, not gonna work."
We had sort of Stockholm syndrome, like, "Yeah, we can make this work."
No.
Yeah, you always want to. You always want to. It's like, no. Keep pushing forward. No going back.
Well, that's a really good lesson too. Is knowing when to like let something go and start over. Yeah.
Well, because the whole editing process. Is about saving everything that went wrong.
Yes,
you know, it's like that's the whole thing. Yeah. It's just like, we didn't get that coverage. Yeah. We're gonna make it work. That's the whole fucking process.
Oh, there's always something when you're shooting. There's always something that you're not gonna have.
Yeah. Overshoot. Yeah, get coverage.
Get coverage. Well, I didn't realize one of the things that we were gonna be sacrificing was going to be coverage, and we were doing like a lot of two shots and stuff. And you know, it's a comedy, and you if you don't have that the pacing and the timing down in that two shot, then there's not a lot.
And
you
we were lucky if we got three takes for something on The Selling too. So
I would do less.
Did you guys do a lot of rehearsing? Did you guys do a lot of rehearsing beforehand?
Not as much as we wanted to.
Yeah. Like, I wanted to be completely off book beforehand, because I wrote myself into 90% of the script, because I am a huge. A-hole, apparently. But like all the producing duties, like the last 2 weeks before the
last thing we were thinking about was our acting.
Oh, that's the worst.
I was like literally cramming lines before going and shooting like a big, and it's like a scene that was like a big speech that had been written to be like, you know, it's in this room and then this room, and it's like, you know, cutting. It's like, yeah, we're going to do all this in one take.
Go.
Like, okay, great. So there are, you know, moments in the movie that
do you recommend trying to balance the performer producer roles and writer?
There's nothing quite like having control.
Yeah,
but it's really hard.
I like having no one to blame but myself.
Yeah, me too.
But it is really hard. It's really, and I think that my performance suffered in the movie.
I know mine did.
At least in my eyes.
Well, you're trying to get through a scene and they're like, cut, Gabe, the next actor isn't here yet. Can you call him? Yeah. Oh, okay, let me just step out for a second.
Exactly.
Well, right. Gary Shanley talked about that in one of his interviews about the Larry Sanders Show, where he says it's just, it was the hardest thing out of everything was separating after being done, like getting everything ready and writing the shows and producing it, like just completely not thinking about that so he could work on the performance. Right. He said that was the hardest part, was separating the writer's mind, especially being in a scene. When you're in a scene acting and you know everything about everything instead of just being an actor.
Yeah.
You know, it just, it is really, and then especially if like you fuck up while you're performing your own thing and then you just, there's all these people there because of you and your thing and you're the one messing it up. It feels really weird.
Prep is really important and can help with producing and stuff because like I had all the time in the world to write the script. And then we had all the time in the world to do the post-production, but we had 14 days to shoot it.
Yeah.
So if I could go back and redo it, I really would have focused more on pre-production and trying to get everything in line so that things would have gone a bit smoother.
If I could go back and redo it, I wouldn't have done craft services myself.
Yes, that was a mistake.
It's worth investing a little extra money in someone to just do, just do the craft service.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I guess if you're working with, I mean, you know, there is a romantic idea that we as young maverick artists get in our heads. We're like, I'm going to do it all. I'm going to do everything.
Well, you kind of have to when you don't have a budget. And, like, you can't, if you can't afford someone to do a good job, and you're not, you, well, if I'm not going to pay anyone, I might as well not pay me to do it. And, and I'll at least care about it. And, you know.
Can you barter stuff with people? Like you know, with Kickstarter, you're offering premiums. What were the premiums that you offered for your Kickstarter campaign?
$1 was a digital copy of the book. $5 was a digital copy and an invite to the party. Mm-hmm. $15 was an illustration and like a nice print illustration. Mm-hmm. $25 was
the book and the illustration.
And everyone past that level gets the book, illustration and that stuff. And then you can get like a robot figurine. You get a robot necklace. Mm-hmm. More copies of the book. You could get your name in the back of the book and the acknowledgments. People could actually, we could have changed someone's a character's name to their name, but no one.
I don't think anyone got that one yet.
Anything else?
I think that's a really important thing if you're doing a Kickstarter campaign is to have different levels and to not start too high. You don't want your first level to be $25. You want people
low levels.
You
get a lot of $1 people.
Yeah.
And 25 is a premium number, so make sure you have something good at the $25 level.
Yeah.
And you have to make sure that your video is good because when she told us we had to reshoot, what was your rationale? What did you say?
That on Kickstarter, like when I watch a Kickstarter video, if I want to be a part of their world, then I'm going to donate. And you know, you want to hang out with those people and be cool. You know, think those people are cool. And that first video we shot, I didn't want to be anywhere near those people.
So we actually, you know, we were trying to do it cheap, you know, because we didn't have a budget. We hadn't, you know, made the money yet on Kickstarter. So we invested some money. We got our cinematographer from the movie and used his camera. And we got a makeup artist so that we didn't look like we were dead. and then we rented the bookstore and shot in the bookstore.
Yeah.
And it really just, it was the exact same script,
the
same
best
jokes.
$300. We ever spent. So
So there are ways to find stuff like bartering favors with people.
Totally.
Like I think one of the best training grounds for anyone who wants to get involved in filmmaking would be to get involved in, you know, Channel 101, either in Los Angeles or New York. Just because
great.
This is a whole community of people doing amazing work for nothing. Like, these people are paying money to do this stuff. Like, it's like they're like spending their own money and everyone's excited to work with each other. And you could find, like, who's that guy that likes doing audio? Oh, Adam. Let's call Adam because he'll do it, you know, and he'll do a good job because he's excited about audio. Instead of, like, asking your friend, he's like, hey, can you hold the boom, you know?
Right.
Yeah, filmmaking isn't a solo art, and finding your team, I think, is the most important thing.
Well, I think that's where social networking has become very, very powerful, is being able to find people to, you know, to help you create this thing, with most things, someone is gonna know someone who knows someone, and it's not insurmountable. But you guys did, you literally just have to start the process.
Mm-hmm. Right. And we've also changed our outlook in terms of sort of our goals. Like originally when we made our comedy act, it was like, okay, well, we'll make a comedy act and then, you know, maybe a manager will see us and then they'll start getting us out on auditions. And then, you know, that can lead to, you know, getting a job and then maybe producing our own stuff. And now it's like, you know, it's not about like, I mean, it would be great if someone saw our stuff, right, and wanted to, you know, give us jobs. But thinking entrepreneurially and like you've done with Nerdist and, you know, trying to build an audience and like do your own thing and, you know, build your own things as opposed to just waiting around for someone to make something happen.
Yeah. When you're, you know, when you're like, say you're starting a band, you know, you're not, let's start this band. Let's like do some stuff and maybe we'll all get jobs in other bands. You know, right. no one does
right.
that.
Right.
It's like you make your band to be like your life and your job and like, you know, and to have fun making your own thing.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way people should consider like getting into, you know, any kind of artistic
endeavors.
Well,
I think it's really important to know what it is that you want to say, which most people don't even, right, they can't answer that question.
Right.
They know, well, I want to make a thing. Well, what are you trying to say? Oh, I don't know. I just want to make a thing. Well, know what you want to say, mm-hmm, and then know who your audience is, know who you're talking to. Like when it's even not even just from a creative standpoint, but also if you're trying to raise money, these are questions that like, even when I sold the book, when I wrote my book, in the book pitch, I had to write down very detailed information about, you know, here's who I am. Here's what I'm about. This is the audience that I am trying to reach. This is the, right, these are the people I want to talk to. Here's a little bit about what they're about. Here's how I think I am able to do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you really have to walk them through everything, but in the process, it gives you a little more clarity about the thing that you're making, which is, you know, which I think is just a little bit better to have direction rather than, I'll just make a thing about apples.
Right.
Like, all right, well, you can do that, and you might get lucky that someone might pick it up. Sure, that is certainly a way to, right, do it, but it just stacks the deck a little bit more in your favor if you know what it is you want to say about apples, why you want to say something about apples, who you think you're the apples demographic is.
I'm loving this metaphor, by the way.
Thank you. I'm speaking about Red Delicious. I'm speaking about Gala apples.
Nerdist, sponsored by the Apple Boy.
So, reminding you, apples.
Really talking about apples. I think you should call the Apple Board and see if you can get at least some apples or something.
Is there an Apple Board?
There's got to be an Apple Board.
There should be an Apple Board.
Apple Board, who's your friend?
Not Apple computers. That would be Tim Cook. No. Mm-hmm. Just apples. But I mean, just knowing those things will help you a lot. Just
absolutely.
Sort of focus, focus your efforts.
It's basically having a business plan is what you just described.
Which is hard because, you know, most people who do what we do are very artistically minded and they're like, well, I didn't go to school to learn how to write business plans. I didn't go to school
in school.
But it's important.
Like going to theater classes and studying theater, like there was no like, this is the business of acting class. There was no like, this is how you get headshots and this is how you.
None of that.
It was all about craft, which is great, but that doesn't help you when you get out into the real world. And I think that's applicable for all art.
So if you're listening, school's a waste of time. Thank you.
Matt Myra just rejoined us.
Yay. Yeah.
In case you were wondering.
So, I mean, if you want to do art just for art's sake, and you know, that's fine. But like, if you want to, you're trying to.
If you want it to sustain itself,
commerce, then you have to think in business terms, and you have to educate yourself. And that's something that I wish I had known when I had actually gone to school.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's got to be some sort of a writing a business plan for dummies thing, and you don't have to. You know, you read a book like that, you don't have to do everything it says. You can take elements that make sense for you, but at least understand what it is that you're trying to do before you just try to, before you just...
Like, say, make a book.
Like, make a
and
book.
It's so much easier now with sites like Quora. You know Quora?
Yeah.
You know, you can go on and ask a question, and really smart people who are actually in those industries might answer it and might give you recommendations of things to go research additionally. So, I mean, just with the internet and social networking, you know, it's just become so much easier to actually get that information as opposed to walking into a bookstore by yourself and, you know, browsing the whatever section you're interested in, you know, of books like of how to do things. So it's gotten a lot easier, I think.
Yeah, I mean, with purely artistic endeavors, you can just start them. Like if you want to do stand up, you just start doing stand up. Sure. If you want to write, you can sit down and just start writing. You know, if you want to take it to the next level, like you said, and sort of enter the world of commerce with it and make it the thing that you get paid for. Then that's when you kind of have to start figuring out, all right, you know, what are the processes that I need to go through to create this thing? how would I produce this? How would I get someone else to produce this? I mean, you know, these are just important questions that you're going to want to ask yourself.
Right.
Because you really kind of need a little bit of both of those things.
And having personal recommendations, I can't stress that highly enough. Like trying to wade through like the sales agent thing for movies.
That is a nightmare.
There's so many basically shysters out there. And we took so many meetings with sleazy people. And like, well, maybe. Yeah. And, you know, I finally found someone that I knew who had a recommendation and got us a great, you know, producer's rep. But it's just hard to know who to go with.
Yeah.
And so that's something that's, I don't know, other than trial and error, mm-hmm. How to tell people to figure that out.
Are you afraid to, I mean, I guess when you're going out and making something, you just don't let yourself get weighed down by the fear of failure. Because you know that, well, we're going to try some stuff. Some of it's going to work. Some of it's not going to work. But ultimately, we're in this for the long haul. And as long as we can take a lesson and learn something from each one of those steps, then ultimately it's all worth it.
Right. And there's, I mean, there's that thing of where we just couldn't be happy doing anything else. So, and one could argue we're already failures since we aren't making a living at it yet. So we have nothing to lose.
Right.
I would say that's not true, though. I think you can only fail if you don't. If you just give up.
Exactly. Yeah. I was speaking monetarily as a joke, but yeah, I mean, we're really proud of the stuff that we've done, mm-hmm. and I feel it's successful in that way, and you just, you know, you just gotta go
last
for it.
Last night we had our launch party. And
amazing launch party at Nerdmelt.
Yay!
Oh my God, can we just talk for a second
about
the Dust Bowl Cavaliers?
Yes.
They're amazing.
So good. They were playing Yoshimi. They covered Flaming Lips. They covered a bunch of great bands. It's like an 8-piece bluegrass band that was amazing.
Yes. So good. Their Twitter is DB Cavaliers, right?
DB Cavaliers, yeah.
Could have been 7 pieces, you guys.
Might have been 7 pieces. But it was really great. And Chad was there mm-hmm. selling robot figurines, and you guys were there with books, and there were drinks and a food truck, and it was
big
really
bottle of whiskey.
And a bunch of people showed up. You guys had a really nice event.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. We got to meet some of our backers.
And
that's what's
really
so exciting.
Cool
that's what's so exciting is like it's not, you know, I think, you know, when you're trying to build a community to support the thing, you have to remember that it's not just about you taking money from them or taking mm-hmm. that you really are building a community.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, these people get on board, like you said, because they want to hang out with you. And most of the time, they're people that you go, holy shit, I would totally hang out with this
Absolutely.
Person.
Absolutely. Everyone, all of our backers we met last night were really cool people who I want to know more about. And if someone mentions it on Twitter, sometimes if I have time, I'll stalk them a little bit and read their tweets and stuff. And there's really cool people out there who like the thing we did.
We had a librarian show up. Two librarians?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, who'd gotten the sexy librarian package because she had to because she was a librarian.
She's a sexy librarian.
She was a sexy librarian. And some guy who got one and then a couple for his kids and for his kid to give to her English teacher who was teaching Mark
Twain
in class. And just people
a guy who teaches eighth grade who's going to use it as his reading.
But not only that, the other side of it is a kid who might not normally be inspired to read Mark Twain sees that there's a robot in it
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden is like, oh my God, robots?
Yeah.
Right.
That's awesome.
We say that in our pseudo-intellectual
They never explain the robot. It just says robot.
It's just there.
There's pictures.
Mark Twain was a genius.
It's an alternate reality. It's like that John Travolta movie where the white people were the oppressed.
White Man's Burden.
White Man's Burden.
Dave Matthews Band on the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Really?
And,
no one
Harry
cares.
Belafonte was the rich black guy in it who was sort of the man.
And then it's
always
like
got his foot on Whitey's neck.
The thugs were the skinheads, and they had like a white Rottweiler mm-hmm. or a bulldog of some sort. It's such a bad movie.
I really think though, you know, the lesson to take away was that, and all the popular music was like Pat Boone. No, it's not.
That works for the current world we live in because white people. Never mind.
No. No, yes, no, Pat Boone would not dominate the MTV Video Music Awards.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah. Anyway. Michael Bublé? No, I'm trying to think of the whitest.
I'm confused.
Michael Bubble. Mikey Bubbles. But I think, you know, a lot of artists or a lot of people look at social networks and the building of community really more like they're the... they're the lord of a fiefdom mm-hmm. or something, right. where it's like, yeah, I'm going to build a community and they're just going to support what I do, when you have to realize, like, no, community means we're all this together, yeah. and, you know, that means, you know, of not just treating people like you're trying to take something from them, but right. but you're all, you know, you're all in it together, and you should have to appreciate that element of it.
And that's the great thing about the internet and technology. And, you know, like we said, a couple years ago, we wouldn't have been able to do this project mm-hmm. at all, because we wouldn't have been able to afford it, raise the money, or connect with people to get the idea out there.
So that's it, people. No more excuses. If you want to make a thing,
make it.
You have every resource at your fingertips. Mm-hmm. The internet is a magic genie. You just have to ask it the right questions. You just no, Matthew?
No.
Oh, I say, what's your wrong? What's your point of contention?
The internet is a really mean magic genie.
Yes, it okay. is an
oh,
evil.
No, yeah. A genie does what the people do to it.
We did a web series, yeah. and I star in it, and the amount of Mary Olson.
Yeah,
the amount of 13-year-olds who seriously suggested I kill myself because I'm so hideous was like through the roof. And it's like, I'm an actor; I can take. You know, I mean, I go into rooms every day, and I'm too fat for those rooms, so that's fine. But you know, like, other people don't have thick skins, and that's a horrible thing to say to someone. No wonder there's teenagers out there who putting their things on YouTube and getting their feelings really hurt.
Yeah, by a bunch of people who are, I mean, all the people who said those things are miserable people.
Yeah, yeah.
Miserable, I mean, 13-year-old
happy
girls.
People don't think to do no. things like that.
There's actually an episode that we wrote after that where she goes to a dating workshop, and one of the exercises is called First Impressions, where they bring someone up in front of the group and say, what are your first impressions of this person? And we just took all the quotes.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's great
directly
idea.
Things
from
that were said about me.
Of terrible,
and there were just as many
things.
People, and I play a really pathetic character, and there were just as many people who said, oh, that's just like me. And so it was like, oh.
What was, which series was...
It's called Mary Olson. It's on youtube.com/DeAnnieDevine. Yeah. And it was a short film that we made called Girls Night Out for Sketchfest, yeah. Competition there, and put it up on YouTube. And then like 3 months later, she woke up and had like a million
emails from YouTube.
Yeah. And, from YouTube of comments and stuff. And it got like 1.3 million hits. And so then we made a little follow-up couple episodes. And we've actually written a 10-episode web series arc that we're hoping to start shooting next year.
So you guys don't give yourself enough credit, because everything you say to me is, we had an idea and then we just made a thing. And then we just made more of that thing.
Okay. Well, I'm being self-deprecatory.
No, that's not a word.
Let me tell you a story.
I'm very self-defecating. I shit on myself.
He shits on himself all the time.
All the time. Gross. That's what I wanted to say.
Grandpa's very self-defecating.
So here's an example of how we're always just late to the party, just in terms of like the industry in general, and why we go out and do the things that we do. Like, we made this movie, and so I went to go take a copy to my agent. I'm going through the door into the agency, and he's coming out, and he looks right at me and walks past.
You didn't even recognize him.
Recognize me. My agent did not recognize me at all.
Which is a great sign.
Yeah.
3 weeks later, 3 weeks later, he fired me. so now
wait, who did I call again?
Right. Exactly.
It's Gabe.
So
Gabe.
And then like Barry Bostwick, who's in the movie.
Yeah.
And
really?
Barry
he's
Bostwick.
Awesome.
He plays the exorcist in the film.
Oh, that's awesome. I love Barry Bostwick.
He was
this
great.
This story he's might fantastic. Make you just sound pathetic, Gabe.
Well, I'm just saying, like, don't give up. Like,
yeah,
don't,
yeah.
you know, things.
Your point is that ridiculously humiliating career things happen, but it's okay because you
listen,
do other
I
things.
I listen to the Nerdist podcast, and I listen to Nerdist Writers podcast.
Which is amazing.
Ben Blacker does an amazing job.
Yeah, I paid my dues for 6 months doing stand-up.
Oh,
and
yeah, and we always say, ah.
I know who you're talking about.
Good for you. Great. No, but just to let people know that, you know, like, oh yeah, I was kicking around auditioning in LA
for 3 weeks before I got a job.
And
well, it's all about the work, and yeah. you know, as long as you are consistent with it. I mean, I have a metaphor that it's probably not a great metaphor, but you know, I sort of feel like
it's about apples.
It's not about apples, but you know, with anything that I care about that I'm in for the long haul, where I've decided, like, you know what? I'm going to fucking make this work no matter what.
Right.
No matter how much I get rejected, no matter how much it hurts, and no matter how much, you know, I have moments where I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? you know, every day I'm going to go out and I'm going to punch a tree. And sooner or later, that fucking tree is going to go down.
Yeah.
Right. That I'm going to punch through that goddamn tree in the backyard at some point. And you know what? It's sort of like it, just the way things work with kind of, if you're headed in a direction and with the momentum, it's a lot like compounded interest. Like, yeah, okay, great. I get a few cents here and there. Oh, over a year that adds up a little bit. And then that compounds the next year and then the next year. And then all of a sudden, before you know it, like all this, it's bigger than you thought it was going to be because you didn't give up and you reassessed your plan every so often, but you had a plan and you just figured it out.
It's about having a body of work, and I don't mean to be complaining. Am I complaining?
No, no, no.
Okay. But I just want to say, like, it's hard, and I want people
to don't know if you should be talking about on the podcast about how you can't get an agent.
Well, maybe there's some agents listening who's like, oh, I'm going to scoop this guy up who can't get an agent.
Can't get an agent he wants.
There you go.
No agent has... compared to what he deserves and he knows he needs.
It's going
to
be funny if your ex-agent hears the podcast and then calls you in to meet with him. And you're like, you dropped me. And he's like, we've never met.
What?
What's your name?
I don't know who you are.
Well, I think you're doing an amazing job. Congratulations.
I think you're doing an amazing job.
You're nice.
We're proud of you.
I'm proud of you. Blah, 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 blah. Fap, fap, fap.
Keep going. I want to hear more of this shit.
But congratulations on the movie. Congratulations on the book.
Thanks, man.
And you know, I've always believed in you guys, and always, like, whenever I've seen you perform or just stuff that you work on, I've always been like, nah, there's something extra special going on there. So
thank you.
So it's, you know, I would like to see, you know, I want to see your growth and see you guys.
I'll show you my growth.
Do all the things.
Whoa.
All
right.
You should get that cut off.
What, his dick?
The growth. Oh. Not the dick.
His dick is the growth.
He was talking about his dick.
Oh.
I was talking about the growth on my dick.
I'm embarrassed for you.
Your dick has a dick?
What?
You're going to cut off your dick's dick?
Yes.
Well, it wouldn't be the Nerdist podcast if we didn't.
If we didn't
land it into the dick port, which I always tend to do.
Docking.
It's my fault.
I'm just trying to fit in.
Beep.
It's my fault.
You are just trying to fit in. Do you want to say anything filthy or?
No, but I listen to the podcast while I'm doing dishes, and
apparently you're not doing dishes lately.
Yeah. Oh, no, you should listen to the podcast.
Well, I got to work on Dishmageddon, but
too much dishes.
It's always like hanging out with you guys and not being able to participate. So now I can listen to myself. And not be able to participate.
Oh, Gabe, why did you say that? You're saying it out loud to yourself.
Why did you tell the story about the agent?
Do you want to tell people to enjoy their burrito?
I do.
Okay.
Enjoy your burrito.
Well done. A Diani and Divine first.
We're big burrito fans, so.
Yeah.
Let's go get burritos after this.
Yeah. Let's do it.
We're
get
literally
the breakfast burrito from the Black Dog. Very good.
That's a good burrito.
Do they make it in the afternoon?
They also have a good Mexican scramble. I don't think they do the
2
breakfast.
2 p.m. after 2. Yeah.
All right.
We have to do a thing at the Baja Fish in Pedro.
We will. Oh, that's where the original Enjoy Your Burrito thing came from.
Yeah, so good.
All right, we'll do it. Let's all do Mexican Scramble.
Are we still recording?
Yeah, why? You have anything
else?
Something's
going to happen.
Yeah.
Just wait for it. Wait for it.
Here
it comes. Should we make fart noises?
What?
Yes, please. I thought you were going to make a fart noise.
I used to be really good in third grade. That's good. Thanks. That's really good.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Comedy Bang Bang every Friday at 10, 9 central on IFC.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.